This week on the Vulture Club, Jen and I are diving into Love is Blind. Well, actually, we're kind of emerging from the fog of what was Love is Blind, Netflix's latest reality TV series that has completely ensnared the nation, the globe. We cannot stop talking about it. On Today I Learned, Jen takes us through an incendiary TripAdvisor review. And on Come Again, we break down the newly rebranded coronavirus COVID-19 and catch up on Trump's take on it, as well as our very own Fiona Hyde's take. In Bed In or Bin It, we've got our favourite pop culture recommendations of the week and a bit of a chat about what happens when content is too much. It's just too intense. We're talking, of course, about the trials of Gabriel Fernandez that aired on Netflix this week and is an absolutely harrowing story that I found kind of unwatchable. So, come on in. On Come Again this week, we could not talk about the coronavirus reaching our fair isle. Or, as it's now been rebranded,
COVID-19.
COVID-19. It's getting more and more like X-World. Is X-World that zombie movie with Brad Pitt?
Could have been. We're all going down.
It's getting more and more like 28 days later. And there's a kind of a panicked tweet from an entrepreneur by the name of Declan Ganley imploring the Irish government to release the flight number that our patient zero came in on. So obviously rumours are swirling, but the person affected in Northern Ireland came on a flight through Dublin Airport. It's said that they took a bus to Carnley Station and then a train. And people are calling for the government to release the flight number.
But that's pointless now because he's been on a train and a bus. So we need those details as well.
This tweet says, bound to be several people who know it. If the government hasn't got the decency to do it, someone please leak it.
It's too late.
And do the country a service.
Oh, for God's
give people
sake.
A chance to mitigate from the bottom up. Someone with the airline can do the decent thing. A crew member, grounds crew. It can be anonymous. People are counting on you. It's a reaction.
Well, it's difficult
it's
to say here.
Me. He is panicking me, Jen.
You're not to be panicked. So
anyway, thankfully, I was panicking. And then I read one of our rogue contributors, Fiona Hyde's Instagram. Fiona has a suggestion. Are you ready, Jen?
I'm ready.
This week's Come Again. Hunger Games idea. The Irish government tweet out the flight details at random from official Twitter accounts. First of the populace to murder the whole passenger list wins non-surgical grade face masks and a swimming pool of hand sanitizer. Thank you, Fiona, for that. Providing that
beautiful
levity in this panicked time. I am
scared. I tell you
scared.
What, calm
I
you
am
down.
A wimp.
You need to listen to the Daily's Thursday episode, The Coronavirus Goes Global, on the Daily's. That's the New York Daily podcast.
Okay, give Very me a good. TLDR on it. Don't worry.
Well, we just need to look at the numbers and some of the facts.
Yes.
So the coronavirus, or the, what did I say it was called now?
COVID-19.
COVID-19. Is a strain of the flu.
Yeah.
I think something like 80% of people that contracted at a low level.
Right.
You can get different forms of it. But ultimately, if you're younger than 80... your kind of immunity is...
I've read 65.
At a good level. You're not ill. You don't have a respiratory ill or kind of a heart condition.
A compromised immune system.
Also, at the moment, it's looking like children seem to be able to fight it off. So they're okay.
Touch wood. Touch all wood. The wood.
Okay, I don't know.
I'm
not
professional
a doctor,
panicker.
But you really need to look into the numbers before you start panicking. Because it isn't really a case.
I was on the HSE.ie.
Yeah. And it's,
and hand washing...
Yeah.
Coughing and sneezing into your elbow.
Yeah.
Not your hands and then rubbing it on the face of another, please.
Yeah, so that's how you contract it. So you contract it by somebody sneezing
The droplets.
The droplets. In, but also...
Or spending time touching, within 2 meters.
But if I sneeze into my hands and then I touch a table and then you touch the table following and touch your eye,
yeah,
that's a way of contracting it too. So it is difficult. And particularly with the face mask stuff, right? Because I was on Amazon today thinking like, oh, I wonder what the story is with these face masks. And then I was like, I don't know anything about face masks. What ones are we supposed to be buying here?
I thought you were going to use Balchinian.
Balchinian. That was just a way of keeping people in general away from it. So if you're looking at like okay. buying up a load of masks, just do a bit of research. So you know the blue ones, they often blue, they're the surgical ones. So mm-hmm. they tie around your head. So they kind of a fluid barrier. They capture respiratory droplets. So if you look at them, they have like kind of layers of fiber that would kind of make it difficult for actual fluid to get through. But for the most part, those masks are to be worn by people who have it
yes.
to prevent them from giving it to somebody else.
Yes.
So not great if you just don't want to contract it.
The HSE website basically were like, lads, don't bother with the face masks.
Well, that's
unless you have it, which yeah. you don't. Lads, piss off.
There's a Mark III mask that you can buy, which has filters. This pretty heavy duty sort of mask with
is
filters.
Is this the actual gas mask?
You'll notice that Gwyneth Paltrow wore it on her last flight abroad. She tweeted about it. That is one that you, if you did want to not contract it, that would be fairly okay at doing it. But in saying that, if you still touched your eye, having yeah. touched something that somebody had coughed on, that would be a way of contracting it too. So at this point, there's kind of no avoiding it.
I mean, it looks like I'm rocking a newborn, but I'm actually self-soothing over here.
Are you worried for yourself?
No, I think I'm just extra worried because I have a very tiny new human.
Yeah.
Yeah, you.
He's still here.
He's still here. I know. The school sent out advice today. I read all the HSE stuff. I was comforted somewhat.
Good.
Obviously,
it's early.
A lot of people are commenting on how everyone's like, it's grand, it's only over 65s, or people with compromised immune systems. And then all the people who love and cherish people who have compromised that's, immune systems or are over 65 are actually not enjoying the cavalier way.
Let's
that
be honest, Sophie. A lot dismissed. Of us are waiting for an inheritance one way or the other. So if it's going to come one way or another.
Of course, Donald Trump has used the COVID-19 epidemic to comport himself with his usual intelligence.
What's he coming out with?
So he's said a few different things. So one response from the Trump team and its allies to the virus so far was, it's actually good for America. Also, it's a hoax perpetrated by the news media and the Democrats. I won't do my Trump. I don't have
did
a Trump.
He actually? Sorry, that's
besides,
a tweet.
It's no big deal and people should buy stocks. Anyway, we'll get it all under control under the leadership of a man who doesn't believe in science. So that is quoted in an op-ed in the New York Times that is quite funny, titled When a Pandemic Meets a Personality Cult, and it's by Paul Krugman. And he basically does chart some of the administration's responses to the pandemic, also noting that as soon as Trump took office, one of the first funding cuts was for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So that was a good play a couple of years ago.
Hmm.
And then he obviously, when it became clear that the virus was originating in China, they had some pretty distasteful responses along the lines of whatever is bad for China is good for us. Wilbur Ross, who was the Commerce Secretary, apparently cheered it on as a development that would, quote, accelerate the return of jobs to North America.
Jesus.
So just pretty much never not on brand over there, guys.
Ah.
So, yeah.
The important thing here is not
wash
to panic.
Your hands.
Wash your hands
wash
a lot.
Wash your hands. Don't take read any Twitter too much
unnecessary
about it.
Journeys to places that are infected.
That's it.
And like just sit around and wait for it to come and go. We're looking at about a year
buy some stocks.
Before a vaccine will
They're
appear.
Running very cheap.
Just 12 months. Survive for 12 months. The vaccine will be here. We'll all be grand.
Yeah. And genuinely, condolences to people affected. It absolutely is shit. Well, it's terrifying.
Do you think anyone's listening? There's very few people globally.
Yeah. I did read a comforting statistic that you were more likely to win the lotto.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I'll be cuddling that close.
You'll be fine.
Thank you.
Love is Blind, newest Netflix reality show. Delighted to see Netflix really embrace reality. They've made kind of, you know, historically sort of terrible-ish movies this far. Although I think they made Uncut Gems, which is my favourite movie of all time. But they have branched out into reality TV and it's fucking good. If you like that kind of thing.
I think it's taken the entire world on a roller coaster of emotional connections.
But it's not through the spending of money because it is the cheapest load of shit I've ever watched in my life. I understand why, on one level, it has sucked everybody in. Because the first two episodes were golden. Then there was six or something in the middle. And then there was an end episode.
All worth it for that end. I mean, one of the most explosive finales I've ever seen.
Let's start from the beginning.
Okay. I think everything about why Love is Blind has worked so well is timing. We were starved, crying out for something that we could enjoy without complications. And Love Island had gotten complicated for people.
Oh.
I think this came about right at that moment where everyone was having to kind of self-reflect too much over Love Island-related debacles.
You could be right there.
And then we managed to all just swoop across the Atlantic to the Americans. They're at a safe distance. Mm. There's no danger of us knowing any of them.
No.
We can talk and judge freely without having to check ourselves.
We must talk about two people who appeared for a total of 6 minutes on the entire series. The host and
Parachuted in for the very occasional piece
What's her
to
name?
Camera.
Vanessa or something. Lachey, right? Comes on for the first episode. Hello, I'm Vanessa Lachey. And Nick Lachey comes in and goes, and I'm obviously Nick Lachey. I thought that was a ballsy move, Nick. No one fucking remembers you. Only because Jessica Simpson has just reappeared back in our lives do we remember you. And to be honest, Nick, everyone thinks you're a dick.
Oh, poor Nick did not manage to rehabilitate during Love is Blind because he got absolutely no screen time whatsoever.
Amazing. They just cut them out completely.
Do you know, it was so funny. Whenever they did come along, did you notice that they just kept re-explaining the premise of the whole show to all the contestants? Even though we're on episode 6 and they were like, you met in a pod.
Oh, God.
Having never seen each other, you agreed to marry each other. I was like, nobody needs a recap on this, Nick.
What about
we all know, and they especially know, the absolute batshit beautiful people who are giving us this content. And what are you doing, Nick Lachey? Fucking nothing. Oh my God, they were the most surplus to requirement hosts I've ever seen.
Useless.
Why did they spend any money on them? They should have put that
fee into the
poor bastards' condominiums they were all stuck living in.
That's the weirdest section of this.
Very
so they
depressing.
Start off, Love is Blind, the concept. They each of them talk through
a lava lamp.
True.
It looks like behind the curtain at the end of Wizard of Oz or something.
It's absolutely spot on. They're talking through a lava lamp
while
each having a single studio apartment in a travelodge in Birmingham, right? It's kind of the vibe. So low-key rooms. And then they build a relationship. But what they didn't focus on...
So they go on dates.
Sure.
Just if anyone has managed to resist. It's like a
I
whole bunch of guys
as long
and
as
gals.
I physically could. And I resented every moment of watching it.
Are you
the
serious?
First two episodes.
I really loved it.
Oh, God. It was absolutely painful. It was so anxiety-ridden.
It was really awkward.
It was so awkward and just so clearly... It was just awkward. It was just people trying... Like a series of people trying not to let anyone know that actually when they did finally see the other person, they didn't fancy them.
Okay.
Nobody fancied each other except for one couple of lunatics.
Kelly
this
and
kind
Kenny.
Of frat boy. And
oh,
this
Amber
lunatic
and Barnett.
Tank girl fancied each other.
Seriously, we have to rewind for anyone who hasn't watched. So They go on a series of dates through the lava lamp with people they've never met. They can only hear voices. On either side of their little lava lamp setup, they're sitting in a little fake living room alone with themselves and a little notebook.
To remind themselves of who they're talking to, because they're dating 12 people.
Yes. And so then they kind of whittle it down to like the ones that they feel an emotional connection with. So basically, like I don't drink, but if you drink, I really strongly recommend that you play a drinking game called Emotional Connection while watching Love is Blind.
Or how about because just drink while the other person drinks?
Well, this that's true. Oh my God, series, they all drink so much.
They were fucking locked every day. Well, on every episode, everyone was locked.
I don't know. Did they have some kind of like sponsorship deal with like those goldfish bowl size wine glasses? I thought the emotional connection thing was one of the most bizarre. It was like they were being paid per utterance. So on any given minute, about six different people would use the phrase emotional connection. Back in the pods, we really had that emotional connection. It was like cult speak. And did the whole show no favors? Didn't make the show less insane, only more. So anyway, after they have a few dates in the pods and they've whittled down their people, and some people just absolutely hated each other immediately. So like Barnett said that Diamond's
to the 40-year-old virgin Christian man.
I know, he so just disappeared. Sad he was gone.
There was another Rory? Guy there, some creative director, age 27, who just behaved as this kind of confidant. We just never saw him on a date.
Well, there was loads of people on dates, dating, and there was about three extra couples that got together. But the producers were like, Saz, we have to focus on just five couples. Like, the producer said that they thought, best case scenario, they might get two couples to get together.
But instead,
they got eight, so they went with five. And so anyway, basically, the couples getting together involves them proposing to each other through the lava lamp, sight unseen, after a cumulative maybe 6 hours of dating.
One of them 3 days in. So I fucking cannot remember any.
I remember them all. Okay. I can identify
Cameron,
each couple.
This giant robotic
Cameron,
AI
scientist,
specialist.
And Lauren.
And Lauren Speedy. Was that, she had a kind of hilarious
she
second name.
She was
Speed.
One of the, I felt.
Papa Speed was her dad.
Papa Speed.
So they were a biracial couple. She was black. He was white.
She'd never gone out with a white guy before.
No, but he had, his previous relationship was with a black girl. So they did seem genuine. I was invested heavily in them. I couldn't have given a shit about anybody else.
That's
I liked
so
her
funny.
A lot.
I really liked her, and I felt worried that he was potentially Christian Bale in American
Serial
Psycho.
Killer vibes. Yeah.
Especially that really amped up when, like, by around episode six. So after the pods, they went to Mexico on a holiday, all of the couples. And then after Mexico, they went back to these really depressing little condos to try living together.
Why?
I think it's just called filler.
It's
just
depressing, though. That
like the whole thing could have been about four or five episodes long. They squeezed the 10 out of it. So anyway, after the condo, they then show each other their houses. And that's when I really started to get worried for Lauren. Because Cameron had bought himself like a family home from out of like, it looked like the house in Father of the Bride.
But no furniture.
Not even sheets on the bed. Like, I presume he just had a very heavy cleanup.
No, his mom had been in. He slipped down the bed.
No way. I think he fucking murdered some sex worker and then cleaned it up and went on Love is Blind.
You're
and
right,
I'm scared for Lauren. Seriously scared. But yeah. I didn't have an emotional connection with Cameron and Lauren myself. Even though Lauren was a dote. And they did both say, oh.
We could talk about this for
hours.
We're
going to do spoilers. But they actually said I do at the wedding.
Well, yeah, but that was
and
obvious. That was going to be obvious.
They've celebrated their 1 year anniversary.
I was going to ask, do you have a follow up for that?
Yeah, I've got a follow up. They celebrated the anniversary back in Mexico.
So they're legit married now.
They're legit married, apparently.
What about the other parent?
Barnett
this is
and Amber.
Spoilers.
Well, we'll say spoilers because the weddings episode came out yesterday. The first two episodes came out first, and I watched them.
But
and
what
I
was doing was watching the first 7 minutes, and I was skipping 15 minutes, and then coming back. I was skipping 15-minute chunks.
Oh, my heart hurts for you that Sophie, this didn't touch you, and you didn't have an emotional connection.
I couldn't. It was just mind bending.
There was
bad.
So many amazing moments, though. Like just. Like,
oh God.
Just listening to a person being like, this isn't how it was back in the pods. about their relationship.
What about that Jessica one? So Jessica...
Jessica and Mark.
Jessica and Mark. So she was 38 or something. He was 24. It was never going to be a thing. She fancied another guy to begin with. The other guy... She ditched Mark initially. When they were still
in the pods.
It
was crushing. Still in the pods.
Took this other kind of jock-like guy. But then he ditched her. So she went back to Mark. Sloppy seconds. And Mark was like, I'm still here. I'm ready for you.
It was absolutely like school disco territory. You know?
Yeah.
When you have one foot on the dock, one foot on the boat, and you go out on a limb for that guy, he shoots you down and then you scuttle back to the sloppy seconds. Everyone knows.
She knew everyone knew. I felt sorry for him. Oh, I felt sorry for her. She did kind of fuck herself up there, and she knew all the time that she was looking like an arsehole. You could see in her face.
Did you feel she was one of the most sane on the show?
Totally.
Like, she was the one who was...
Yeah, the most self-aware.
Quite terrified of what they were all getting themselves into.
Yeah, and she kept getting...
And she was acting like
locked.
A lunatic because she was sane.
Exactly,
It was really funny. Within the context of the show, it was like, Jessica's crazy. And I was like, Jessica's the only normal one among you.
But Jessica was on
and
average
10 years
older.
And getting locked to cope
than everybody
with the stress.
Else. Yeah. That was
getting the dog locked.
Oh God! You know when
there's an iconic moment. Did you skip through it?
Yeah, I probably. Why was she feeding the dog wine in the bed?
He was kind of drinking out of her glass, and then she's
absolutely. That's
that
desperate.
Was not putting her off in any way.
But now she's forever on Netflix in this kind of weird old woman who's pissed, and then oh God.
It was really hard to watch because she was a sort of like she really wears the booze on the face.
Just in that kind
like
of joke.
Like, as the booze is building up.
But this is terrible that we're talking about her like this as well, you know? This is all, why is that fucking okay, this show okay? And other shows are not okay. This is still exploitative. It's still kind of, we're zooming in on vulnerable people here. The way they produce these shows is they strip you of social media and contact with the outside world, like we've talked about before on the
Swan.
For weeks on end beforehand.
No contact with family and friends.
This bubble of you know, totally unreal intensity, and you're behaving unlike you would in a normal setting. And now it's that behavior is locked in forever and had been viewed by millions and millions of people. So it's still incredible that anyone fucking agrees to do this in the first place. Really and truly. How, like, what? We're way past the days when an appearance on Big Brother would mean you'd be set for life. We are way past that.
Oh, God. Like, the best. I don't know if we were ever in those days.
But we were. When reality TV initially kicked off, like, you could make a lifetime career out of it. But now that is definitely not the case. So it does make you wonder. And also this kind of idea of love, marriage and a family being the ultimate goal and win at the end of this means like it's so emotive. It's so preying. It's not right. Because look what we have at the end. Like you've these kind of... Then they set this fucking creepy ass fake wedding up when half the people's families are no-shows. So you're looking at the audience in the end episode and then... They're trotted up to say the I do's, and we're all supposed to believe that it's an in or out situation as well, you know? No, you have to never see them again or marry them right here in front of us and our, you know, production team. And that's just accepted. Yeah. And everyone's going along with that. And then it pans across to the audience at the hashtag wedding. And like, no, you know, your man Cameron's family wasn't there, just his mum, they obviously managed to rope in. And it's all just like, guys. What are you doing?
What do you think you're doing?
But then half the people say, I don't.
Yeah.
And that is...
Crushing. Oh my God. Like, I was really invested in Kelly and Kenny.
Which, okay.
And they were...
Describe who those people
genuinely
are.
Genuinely two of the craziest people who were in the show.
Are you trying to tell me...
Yeah.
They are the most forget kind of bland,
the most forgetful, the
kind
most
of cocoa noodles.
They looked like brother and sister doppelbangers in a big way. Let me get a picture. These two, very uncontroversial,
right? Two white but middle America type people,
totally. And I don't know why they spoke to me, except
that's so weird, Sophie.
I know. I think it was because they were both so kind of innocent.
No,
they seemed very innocent, Jen, and I'm in a very emotionally vulnerable place.
They are the example of the couple that she just they didn't have sex.
I thought they really liked
they didn't
each other.
Fancy each other.
I know.
They did like remove a whole part. It was almost like an experiment in will you marry somebody that you don't want to shag? And the answer is no. Ultimately, it comes down to it. But they also just, in their kind of collection of people, it was all just exclusively shaggable people.
Well, there was a kind of a baseline of shaggability. Yeah.
Do you know, like there was nobody outside of the parameters of being very attractive.
I don't know.
Or just okay attractive, but definitely still attractive. Like there what was nobody that we didn't have any kind of body
Damien.
Shapes. We didn't have any disabilities. Who's wrong?
No, there was absolutely no diversity. You're right. Well, Damien, I would have said now, you know.
Damien.
He dipped below that baseline.
Damien was.
No,
oh God.
I tell you, do you know what? Damien looked friggin' haunted by the time the wedding came around.
He was so controlling. He was a frightening character.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was with Giannina. The two of them from the off, I was like, oh, this is a car crash.
Gigi, but Gigi's middle name.
Milady?
Sophie, Milady. Was that.
But he ditched her so beautiful. At the altar, which was, I mean, I don't know if it was kind of like a bit of a U-turn.
Right,
but
he ditched her at the altar, but not before writing her this fucking bullshit poem, saying all these vows. I mean, what was all that about? And then to ditch her. What was that? Tell me. I'm confused.
You're right. He was a lunatic.
He was a lunatic. The whole premise is mad. They'll run it again for another series, but it'll never have the same impact.
I feel like pitching it in the room. Surely the commissioner was like, no one will do this.
Netflix don't have to ask anyone's house.
No, as in no contestants will do this.
Yeah. How much do you reckon they got for it?
They totally did it. I looked around to see if there was any kind of compensation.
And
I couldn't find anything about that. Like there didn't seem, I kept being like, is there money for the winners?
Well, there was no money for the, but look at the weddings.
I know.
The dresses.
Oh, like a couple of them wore the same dress.
That whole scene.
Jess and Amber seemed to be in the same dress. They wanted the same guy from the start. It was very strange. Barnett and
they
Amber.
Kept
we have to talk about them.
Barnett and Amber. So Amber was tank girl to me. Barnett, this sort of jock fellow. And it was like a very sexually charged atmosphere between the two of them. Even in when they were in the two living rooms between and the lava lamp, there was still a lot of chemistry. But Barnett,
I don't know, they were like your friends at Irish college when you were 14 or 15 who like kind of kept dry humping, like just out and about in the group, and you were like, please
put it away.
And then like you then would discover that they hadn't even like, you know, topped each other.
I really liked her.
Do you remember topping?
Yeah. Over topping or under topping?
Oh, yeah. Well, exactly.
You're currently being like ultimate topped right now. Awkward. Sunny. Hashtag consent.
Yeah. Amber was one of those, you know, those people who say they're mad loads.
She was my fucking favorite person. I would 100% be her friend. I liked the cut of her jib. Do you know what she was? She was really authentically herself.
She's like, I'm crazy.
But she was.
But I was like, I don't even think you're really like,
come on.
You're not really
brilliant.
Ticking that many crazy boxes.
She did exactly what she said on the tin. She was fucking smashed broke. She had a shit credit level. She told Barnett. So during the kind of awkward, you show me your house and I'll show you mine.
Yeah.
Barnett had sort of bought a gaff and it was just covered in dog piss. And it was like a pretty average shit gaff.
Probably the most humongous brown L-shaped sofa I've ever seen.
It was just an L-shaped sofa.
Brown.
With like a giant roof over it. And he was a bit frightened about, I don't know what the housing situation is like over there, but he wasn't that keen to show it off, didn't think it was much. She thought it was amazing. And you could see him going, oh, fuck, if you think this is amazing, what am I going back to? So they wheeled, then
sad
they
fact,
drove over.
I thought it was amazing. Well, I thought it was amazing that they all owned houses.
It was his America, Sofs.
I know.
Different scene. So anyway.
Different scene.
She got into the car and they drove to her gaff to do like, you show me mine and I'll show you yours. And didn't they roll up then to this kind of like there was nothing fancy about this gaff. It was sort of like children spilling out all over the shop and an old rickety fence and like and
it looked like Dermot Bannon's hot tub house.
That's exactly what it was, except like a sprawling bungalow effect. So it was obviously they didn't have too much money, and you could see him sort of working the cogs kind of taken over in his mind.
Yeah,
and there was definitely a division then. The minute she was introduced to his family, that was the vibe from his family as well. And then they had the scene where she was telling Barnett that, you know, look, I don't have any money. I didn't finish college. I'm in this debt. It was actually a really important scene. And a lot of
definitely.
Shit people
and
don't talk about.
It speaks to stuff that comes up for relationships all the time.
And should have been talked about before, especially in the States where most people come with a load of debt. And once you get married to somebody, their debt is your debt.
Mm.
So I thought that was really clever and good that they included that. So I kind of, I just really liked her. I thought like she was all balls in. She didn't pretend to be anything she wasn't. She wanted to be a stay-at-home mother. You know, that way she was very clear in what she wanted and she was very direct. She also was very a good communicator. Like she didn't lose the head with him when he kind of was making noises about, look, you know, my family are challenging me. It's going to be difficult. You know, they were just working shit through and she didn't fly into a, it's me versus them. She kind of did say that, but it was sort of measured. I kind of liked her.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Amber, definitely.
Now you've convinced me.
He was just a fucking pleb though. Like he could have been anyone. I hope it works out for her, for them, for her sake. He was that sort of, you know, Jason, what's his name? Von something or other from Dawson's Creek?
Vanderbeek.
He was sort of a Vanderbeek, like all American.
They didn't all of them, but her and Jess kind of were warring over him.
Yeah, Amber kept threatening to break Jess's nose to her face.
Break her face.
Which was kind of interesting.
Now, it seems that they are still together.
Oh, good.
Though, Sonny, please. Though, it's... Look, it's not as confirmed as some of the others. Let's put it that way.
Little vague? What are you getting up there?
Well, I've got through the Venmo transactions.
Okay.
Allegedly revealed they don't follow each other on the finance app. So Venmo is a finance app.
Okay.
But a source close to the production did tell Women's Health magazine that Amber recently took the last name Barnett.
Oh.
That was probably one of the most interesting things to happen in the show.
Surely
was the
Instagram.
Reveal that Barnett is not his real name, but his
second name. Matthew Barnett. I'm going to Google him now. Barnett surely will be up there on Instagram.
And so then, anyway, of course, we have Carlton and Diamond. We haven't even talked about Carlton and Diamond.
That was a fucking disgrace.
Now, they never even
actually
made it to...
She was...
they got
her
to Mexico.
They set her up and made a fucking fool of her. That was shit.
It was kind of mad, yeah. So Carlton basically was bi and he didn't tell her in the pods... And they seemed mad about each other. And then he told her in the on the Mexico leg. And I think his whole kind of way of telling her was kind of orchestrated to make her look like an asshole. What did you think?
Yes, Sophie.
Was like, okay, you didn't tell me in the pod.
And it was so obviously a very important
thing
to
say
to tell
in the pod.
Somebody. I mean, at the end of the... Like, they had agreed to get married before they left for the honeymoon. I mean, at that point, they had proposed.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to believe all the shit, if you were in the moment, in the show, and you were going with it.
Yeah.
She, you know, that's an important thing to say to somebody before you get married.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable.
Yeah. And I just... He was... The way he sort of...
I think he got really defensive.
He did, yeah.
And it was... I felt almost like... He wanted to kind of push the relationship to breaking point in a kind of get me out of this way.
Well, then he started.
I wondered because the way he dealt with
her
it was
wig,
really.
Which was
so
low.
It was low.
That was really.
Their final interaction was horrible.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, they tried to build a what's described as a semi friendship, but it was short lived. And once the episode about the breakup aired, Carlton took to social media to once again disrespect Diamond.
Yeah, he was a fucking arsehole.
Yeah. I mean...
all together.
He claimed that she was biphobic, and I think that he was just, he just dealt with it really abominably, and those two things shouldn't be confused.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely right. I thought, like, she was set up to, she has every reason to be angry with the production team, with the edit, the final edit. I think that, yeah, that was really low blow to sort of put her out there. And I don't know, and considering they were like the only African-American couple as well, I just felt like, oh, guys, come on. Like,
yeah,
that was just shitty, shit move.
It was interesting. You got a bit of insight into the proximity of the production team to the kind of players after my pals Kelly and Kenny didn't make it.
The doppelbangers. Sorry, there was no banging happening between them.
No, zero banging.
Too much and sibling, like, vibes.
One of the crew went after. So Kenny actually made like a very reasonable speech at the wedding after Kelly said, I don't, and left. He made a very nice speech. And then one of the camera guys kind of went after him and was like, how are you feeling right now? And he was like, I don't want to be filmed right now. And the camera guy kind of tried to push it a bit, and he turned around and he was like, Jim, get that out of my face. Yeah. And it was like, ooh, so interesting. Just like,
that's why imagine
being on that crew.
Is a reality
show. Exactly.
That's what we're all hankering for.
Reality squared, please.
Because that's where the fucking juice is.
Absolutely.
So I was at lunch with a pal, a mutual friend of ours.
Mm.
And that friend is a friend of somebody who went into the jungle on the last series.
Oh.
So she was talking about...
What a disgusting noise I just made.
Oh,
what?
Oh. So she was talking about the... she had been talking to him about his experience in the jungle, and that kind of being cut off from friends, family and news and the world, and how fuckery.
Yeah.
That, how much that plays with you. It
would mess with your mind so much.
And,
because I think, like, somebody blue ticks me in a WhatsApp group, I can be pushed pretty close to the edge pretty quick.
Well, there... But that's
I don't belong in the jungle.
But that was the kind of takeaway from my conversation with our friend about it. Anyway, that he really felt that was a huge factor in this, the isolation, the kind of the feeling, the knowing that everything was. Oh
my poor God! Sorry.
Is he all right?
Yeah, he's just having a little cough.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, and now we've moved from like the initial reality TV. Was one thing, but now reality TV with social media is an entirely different thing.
We've gone into post reality TV.
Yeah, so depriving somebody of their social media now,
seems
to be a major fucking thing.
It's a trigger.
It's a trauma.
Yeah,
and it causes for people to have a withdrawal, and for them to behave, differently.
And then obviously, in the aftermath of these things, gives all of the viewers who now feel they know them on a certain level, insane access to them.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
So why agree? Who is the sort of, you know, when you watch like political shows and there's the fixer kind of character who would sort of get people on side to give an interview and like talk and massage people and kind of convince them to. So it's those type of characters in the production team. Coming, like, finding people and convincing them to come on the show. Like, what sort of techniques do you think they're using?
Did we talk about this on a pod or just in our own friendship? The semi-friendship we're persisting with. John Ronson wrote a really interesting essay about this in his book, The Psychopath Test, where, so in the essay, he interviewed a booker. Who worked on the Jeremy Kyle show, and she disclosed that one of the methods was finding out if the potential participant was on any psychiatric medication, and if so, what psychiatric medication. And they had kind of devised among the team a kind of litmus test of like the right kind of sort of potentially unhinged person or the right kind of person who suffers in this way. And so she told Ronson that, you know, an antidepressant might be a kind of a signal to them as a booker that this would be a guest they would like to have on the show. So it's really dark. Very dark. And in that essay, she spoke about a guest who had come on the show that she had booked. She had done that kind of questioning of, and do you take any medication? And the guest had said yes, had disclosed what he was taking. He went on the show. There was, like, as there always is, this kind of, like, you know, mandatory humiliation that happens with these things. And a few weeks after the show, he died by suicide. He rang the offices telling them what he was planning to do and how his life had been completely derailed and by the whole experience, and he died. And that is, sorry, a really grim story.
So what became
from
of
a very good
of that
book.
Booker?
She quit. When John Ronson is interviewing her, she's actually on maternity leave, but she had left. She said that it was emotionally grueling. The sense of responsibility was, you know, obviously had really gotten to her.
So on the back of the Love Island experiences in the UK,
there's been loads of casualties.
There's been loads of casualties, and they've implemented kind of an aftercare team. And this has been widely publicized that they're looking after the kind of, or so they say.
Yeah.
So that isn't the case. Well, I don't know whether that's the case or not with the States, with American reality TV shows.
Yeah.
So is there...
I don't know if they have, though. Sorry.
I feel like the appetite is different. There's a different sort of take where culturally there's something different happening. It's almost, I mean, you can compare different reality shows, but the take, there seems to be a darker sort of digging from what we've seen from our UK and, you know, from our kind
from
of
all
local.
The events, even just in the last month.
Well, that and just the kind of the way our reality shows here have kind of gone do seem to be darker in the sort of sex on TV, more sort of more intense, more, you know, stripped back. Whereas the US one, like Love is Blind, for instance.
Yeah.
It's much less that. Like the sensational end of it is...
It's a little bit, isn't it? Like which they were a little bit kind of, it's almost safer, even though they did do a lot of drinking.
Yeah.
Which, for example, Love Island, they don't.
Yeah. But there was no scraps, no sex, no, you know what I mean?
It was
no kind of cheating, you know, really. It was all kind of.
It felt more controlled and contained.
Wholesome.
Than some of our versions feel, I think. Sometimes, like, even if you think back to Big Brother days and there was like, really horrible moments on Big Brother regarding like racism,
violence,
and
there was
fights, like, and bullying, and
absolutely
it was real, like it felt more raw.
Yeah.
Whereas Love is Blind feels really produced, you know, and very scripted.
And maybe that's why it's
maybe
more
that
enjoyable.
Is why it feels safer.
Yeah.
Exactly. But even so, what was I gonna say? Oh yeah. I don't know if in the States if they have the kind of like civilians and ex-reality TV stars making for tabloid fodder to the same degree that we do, like in the UK.
Probably not. Yeah.
Which is, I think, potentially a really big difference, because obviously there is that kind of tabloid establishment in the UK that has just such a long history of going too far.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know now that it's the flip side of the same coin with social media. And we saw a lot in the last few weeks of social media blaming the tabloids and tabloids blaming social media. And really, they both run on the same kind of hate baiting kind of impulse that is in us all as humans. And it's really obviously a dark side of us, but it's clearly an appetite that we have. You know, I think right back, like the real watershed moment that I thought I saw was the phone hacking in 2011, where famously News of the World hacked the phone records of a murdered schoolgirl. And I think that was like a kind of a bit of a nadir of...
They didn't only just do that. Then they spent...
Well, that's true. Of course,
they spent time defending it. They defended it in court, obviously, whatever. But then they sent out various journalists to defend it across talk shows. They did interviews on news stations defending their actions. Defending it, suggesting that it was, you know, it was their duty, that the public needed to know. It was just wildly...
I think it was
wrong.
I think it was one of those times when it was in such poor taste that it actually rallied a vast group of people against, you know.
Do you know who? What celebrity took up your man, Four Weddings and a Funeral? Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant, yeah.
He sort of headed up the sort of celebrity end of the fuck you, don't do this anymore.
Yeah, and he's been quite outspoken like in the last kind of year as well and kind of recent times. Of course, the history of it goes way back. There was cases in the 70s where I can't remember which tabloid in the UK had planted journalists in a swinging community. And they approached a man who was, you know, he was divorced, but he had a family. And, you know, they just pretended to answer his ad seeking, you know, other swingers, and it was all adults and consenting. And then they wrote up the story after they attended a party. And
it's horrible.
I mean, it was just another tragic outcome, to be honest.
Really?
He heard that the story was going to run. They revealed to him who they were, and he pleaded, you know, saying that he would potentially lose the right to see his children. It was in the 70s. It was a different time, obviously. As well. And like, obviously, who knows what would happen. I mean, you're being exposed on such an intimate level there. It's gross. And anyway, yeah, that ended really tragically.
Ugh.
I know. It's just such a legacy.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've come full circle.
Come full circle into from love to sadness.
To absolute bleakness. Anyway, that was great.
Yeah.
Will you watch a season two of it?
I don't know. Can you ever really recapture the emotional connection of the pods?
Oh, they'll try. They'll try. This week I learned.
Oh, are you ready? Did you learn this week?
Not to fuck with Token. You know that pub?
Oh. Yes, in Smithfield. Yeah.
Brilliant, right? TripAdvisor.
I go to choir with one of the owners.
Well, maybe this is one of the owners here that I'm going to tell you about.
Okay,
so,
amazing.
TripAdvisor review from a lady. I can't, her name is blurred out, but she's from Pensacola in Florida. She leaves a 1-star rating.
Florida woman.
Never again is the title. We went to Token based on a friend's recommendation. We should do the American accent. Because we love arcade games. I can't continue that shit. So, wow, we were so disappointed. The employees were beyond rude. The service, horrible. Everything behind the bar looked dirty. The glasses looked like they'd never been cleaned in weeks. My husband attempted to play several of the machines. They're all broken. No one who worked there seemed to care at all.
Oh, no.
Is it their job to act rude? Based on other reviews, this seems to be the case. Fucking arsehole. So I will never step foot in this place again.
Oh my God, those glasses haven't been washed ever in the last few weeks.
So Token Smithfield, the owner at Token, responded to the review. I wonder now, hang on. I can't scroll down to see the name of the owner. Anyway, hi, redacted lady's name. Unfortunately, you arrived very drunk and got very aggressive when the manager on duty refused to serve you any more alcohol. I had a look at the cameras and you actually never made it past the bar and into the venue on a table. So regarding the glasses, all of our glasses are cleaned thoroughly after each use. However, you may have thought otherwise as you were standing in front of the service area, which had a sign, "Do not stand here, service area," located where all of the dirty glasses station was. This is where the floor staff put dirty glasses as they wait to be loaded into the dishwasher. For the last 6 minutes, this is verified by CCTV, you were at the bar. The bar staff left the glasses there and didn't wash them because they didn't want to approach you without a manager present. Naturally, once you left the area, they resumed the cleaning procedure. After shouting, I own my own business, you threatened us that you would leave a horrible review on all platforms, with some considerably far-fetched claims. The worst being, a member of staff said something derogatory to my friend on Google, which is a very serious claim, hence the owner getting involved into the investigation process. You were there with one other person who, according to your review, was your husband. And again, according to our CCTV, at no point was in any contact with any staff member. As you can see from the review above you, your visit impacted others experience negatively too. We would appreciate if you stayed true to your word and never stepped foot in Token again.
Well,
so it's amazing.
Burn.
It is great now that, because before you used to be able to leave reviews and there was nobody to answer, nobody could answer. Yeah. But it is spectacularly satisfying when you see the owner of a business, because you're so vulnerable as a business to some fucking lunatic just saying whatever the fuck they want.
Oh, completely. You know? I mean, you're vulnerable as a person now to people doing reviewing you.
And sort of blackmailing you into doing this, that, and the other.
And somebody can say anything and you've no recourse. I mean,
I just think like how...
But he's literally got receipts, which is great.
But it is brilliant and it's really good because I think it improves everyone's behavior overall.
Yeah.
But have you ever left a bad review, Sobs? I haven't. I couldn't
truly know.
I think.
Oh, I mean, I've written not great reviews.
Well. You've reviewed restaurants.
I hate doing, but.
But if it's your job and you're supposed
to
be.
I do think your
responsibility.
Thank you. Your responsibility is to the reader.
Well, that's different.
And, you know, it is remiss to completely, like, boldly lie about an experience in a review that is legitimately reviewing. Yeah.
But there's ways of saying
But
things.
Totally. And I would never, I would never give a roundly awful review because there is always redeeming elements. Although, in the case of that lady in Token.
Ballsy. It's great to see, like, an Irish...
But have you ever left a lashing out bad review?
No, I wouldn't.
Imagine if you confused the condolence book at a funeral for a kind of personal TripAdvisor and you opted to review the deceased.
That's actually a really funny idea.
It really is.
Like an absolute truth bombing.
Just an absolute piss take condolence book that everyone get a real laugh out of.
So instead of, what a brilliant guy. What a guy, so sad that he's gone. But yeah, do you know what? Irish people, I think, naturally
could have
do
been
that.
More prompt, like with response to text messages.
But like, that's it. That happens. Like if you know, the rolling, especially on not a very old person's funeral, it does get past the point of that person was, you know, good across the board into sort of funny stories.
Totally.
And that's good. That's,
which is normal. It's like a balm to the soul when you're, I mean, lots, you know, that's why everyone prefers a funeral to a wedding.
Definitely.
Do they?
Definitely. Anyway, that's my don't fuck with people online.
Oh, that's a really good today, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, what were you betting to this week?
Well, obviously, fucking Love is Blind. It was actually just took up all of my time. You set me a goal. You allowed me no other time to experience anything other than that fucking show.
I know. I am sorry. That was harsh of me. I have listened to all of We Crashed, which Ashton Keenan recommended a few weeks ago.
That's
on this very show. And I got fully betting.
Hang on. Remind me what the fuck it is.
So it's about WeWork. And it's a 6-episode podcast from Wondery, who create excellent content. Dr. Death was one of theirs. And the presenter presents another show called Business Wars. And like, it's not the content I would usually think I would go for, but it's fascinating. It's all about this megalomaniacal CEO called Adam who started WeWork, and it was essentially office space that wanted to be a tech cult. and it has crashed and burned spectacularly. And it's a great listen.
But that's
really
good.
Okay, I'm all up.
What's we crashed. All one word if you're Googling
balls
it.
Balls deep in roots
of evil. Oh my God.
This is both in the bedding and in the bin.
Oh, it's actually straddling out of the bin.
It's so fucking dark. If you're interested in darkness in a real dark, dark way, get on over and check it out. I'll be going in deep in the creep dive for it. It's such creep dive material. But so that's my somewhere in between.
Top line, it's about the Black Dahlia.
It's about the
Black
Dahlia.
Which is one of the most famous unsolved cases in LA, in America.
But it spans like...
3 generations of this crazy family.
Oh, it's unbelievable. So,
isn't it? I mean, I think I'm behind you. I'm into episode 3.
Yeah. So I can't even tell you about it. It's just so, it covers incest. We have child rape.
Oh,
it's fucking
God.
The worst of the worst of the worst. So either bin it or, what's our other thing?
Bet in.
Or bet in, depending
on your
mood. So
get bet in or get it in the bin. It's co-hosted by 2 sisters who are 3rd generation of this family.
Yeah, and it's George Hodel is their grandfather. And he is looking like...
He was a suspect.
Yeah, it's looking pretty like he might have killed this Black Dahlia lady in
Elizabeth
the most
Short.
Horrific way. Elizabeth Short.
And he was actually investigated by his own son,
well,
who wound up being in the LAPD. It's a really interesting story if you can get past the gruesomeness.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
yeah.
We'll cover it on the creep dive. So
yeah.
Come on over there if you fancy it later. So
it's
that's us.
Good.
Thanks
I
for
have
back.
Something for the bin.
Oh,
but I don't know if it is for the bin.
It can't be your newborn.
It's a debate. What do you think when content, and this is actually a good lead on from Root of Evil, when the content is so bleak that it's actually unwatchable, unpleasant, but it's true and it's stories that are like they need to be told for the victims.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course. No, I don't know what you're talking about, but I do think...
The trials of Fernandez Garcia.
I don't know that. No, what is that?
But you know what? I just said it wrong. So I'm talking about the trial of Gabriel Fernandez.
Is this Netflix?
Yes.
What did he do?
So he did absolutely nothing. He was an innocent child and he died in just... horrific circumstances at the hands of his mother and her boyfriend, and it is unwatchable.
Just pull out.
But you know what I found really unwatchable from a few months ago, and it really made me think about when stories are like this. When They See Us. Did you watch it?
No. What's that?
On Netflix. Is an absolutely brilliant drama series based on the story of the Central Park. Is it Central Park 5?
Okay.
It's the case of the Central Park jogger who was raped and assaulted, and then these poor, innocent young black men were railroaded.
Donald Trump didn't get a full page ad in the New York Times condemning them during their trial.
I can't remember if it was during or in the lead up to the trial. There was nothing about their treatment, nothing that resembled fairness or justice, and it was. It's one of the hardest things to watch I've ever seen.
I wouldn't be able now.
And I was there going, this is terrible. I want to pull out because this story is so hard to take in terms of just the injustice, the racism, the tragedy of these lives wasted. But I'm there going, but is it a disservice to them to say, this is unwatchable, your story is too tragic, I can't engage with it.
No, there's reasons why you can at certain times in your life engage with those types of stories, and there's reasons why you can't.
But I do think like it's kind of a cop out sometimes to be like, this history is too much. Say, especially for like me, a privileged
definitely
white woman.
Definitely not a cop out, and definitely a symptom of our time. We need to develop a type of filter. There is just too much fucking information about things that don't affect us, we shouldn't know about. It's just we have now a global view as opposed to sort of a village view, which is what we would have had traditionally. And honestly, it's just too much.
There's a lot
to process.
But I do think it's important to face it.
No, it's not important to face every single, you know, atrocity
this is
that's
history.
Ever happened.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And especially if it doesn't necessarily affect your day to day. And, you know, it
but
is
it,
absolutely
it is
important
informing
to
the
be,
time we're living in.
Sure, it's important to be a witness, but you don't, I don't think, owe it to anybody to put yourself in an uncomfortable situation at a time or when you find it really challenging. Ultimately, you've your own life to live.
Mm.
You can, you know, educate yourself in certain areas. You can't do that across the board into every single part of, you know, that way.
Mm.
You can have top level opinions on things and acknowledge that you don't know enough.
Yeah, always important to
you're
know
not gonna,
that you don't know enough.
Well, that's it. You're not going to fucking have a, you're not suggesting you're going to do a lecture on it.
No.
I mean, you're allowed to just know a bit about stuff. And then to acknowledge that you're exactly right, that you don't know enough. And you don't owe it to go deep on shit that makes you feel really uncomfortable or it feels wrong. You know, there'll be different times in your life when you'll be able to kind of
engage more
on a not so emotional level. You're not helping anyone necessarily by feeling very deeply all those feelings of, you know, horrific sadness. And I don't know how helpful that is to anybody other than, I don't know. Is it sort of egotistical to suggest that you...
Me watching makes a damn bit of difference. Yeah, I know what you're saying there, absolutely. I just think it's kind of an interesting point.
It definitely
that we are
is,
at where,
we're at
as
max,
you said,
you know,
we have the
super
global
saturation
kind of...
stage here. Mm. You have to kind of cherry pick.
Mm.
And you have to be... You have to mind yourself. I hate... sorry, I hate that phrase, but...
Mind yourself.
Mind yourself, right?
You need to... I mean, self-care is over, but I think self-parenting might be about to have a year.
Oh, nice.
You need to self-parent. I pulled out of the trials of...
Harvey Weinstein.
No, I was going to say of poor Gabriel Fernandez. I did watch When They See Us, and it is excellent. It's
okay.
So tough. Mm. But yeah, so yeah, that's all it got me thinking this week. I was like, what about the content that's just so difficult to engage in?
Mm. Just leave that there.
Yeah.
Just leave it there.
I know. On roguecollective.ie this week, we have the beginning of a beautiful new video series by Nadine Reed that moves through the alphabet, interviewing people who identify as different terms. This first week, Nadine meets Andrea Cleary talking about being bisexual and bi erasure. And a piece from Fionnuala Jones about influencers and the shit they take off their followers. So head on over to roguecollective.ie, subscribe, sign up to our weekly newsletter and receive a beautifully curated issue of Rogue every week.